It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, we're not afraid here and declare your independence. Me, Ernest Hancock. Today we have scheduled a special guest for you, Daniel Estulin. Well, where do we know that name from? Well, we know him from his first book, The True Story of the Bilderberger Group. Now, you'll see him. He's featured a lot of Alex Jones material. But, you know, there's more behind it. I mean, is there just a group? And we get rid of that group, then we'll be healed, we're cured, it'll be all over, we're all set. Or is there a philosophy? You know, what is behind all of the machinations of the social and economic engineering that plagues most human beings on the planet? Is there a design? Whose design? And what if we did away with all the bad guys? Would it start all over again? Are we the ones that welcome this kind of social and economic engineering? Our inaction is what causes it? Or is there a single evil foe that must be opposed and then we'll be all good, it'll be all set? Well, either way, we're going to need to know what's going on. And that's where Daniel Estulin comes in. Daniel, is that how I say your last name, Estulin?
Yeah, you said it perfectly well. It's, you know, as well as my father does.
Thank you. Thank you. Shadow Masters. Well, we'll get to that in just a little bit. But what I want to do is your history. We've seen you on various movies. And if you're paying attention to any of the machinations of the global bad guys, your name comes up quite a bit. And the one thing that we do know, I'm going to go ahead and play as dumb as I am. And I don't know nothing. I know nothing. Tell me everything about why you targeted this Bilderberger meeting and groups to begin with. What brought that on? All of a sudden, you feel the need to chronicle what they're doing.
Well, that was, you know, it takes me back to 1992, a friend of my grandfather's who was a double agent. He was working for the KGB and MI6, British MI6 military intelligence. He took me out for lunch one day and over some mashed potatoes and steak. He was telling me about these secret societies, build or something or other. At the time, I couldn't quite understand what he was talking about. Running the world, you know, controlling things from behind the curtain. And it got to the point where, as most people, I imagine, in these particular cases, when they're confronted with, you know, with something that they obviously have never heard of, it just got to the point, they're so ludicrous that I thought to myself, well, you know, it's my grandfather's friend. He invited me for lunch. I'm going to be nice to this man, and then I'm just going to say goodbye and walk away. And one of the things he was telling me, you know, over this lunch, is how in 1995, that's 3 years in the future, Quebec, that's the French-Canadian province, was going to separate from the rest of Canada because a powerful man behind the curtain needed to balance their books. And that's when I said, all right, look, it was really nice meeting you. Have a nice day. And then 1995 came around, and, you know, the Quebec separatists, the nationalists, were making all the right noises, and suddenly everything this man was telling me 3 years back is, was front and center and developing exactly in the way he was telling you things were going to actually develop. And that's when I thought to myself, if this man knew something, and he was actually telling me something in chronological order that's now coming to the fourth, and in fact, the presidents and the prime ministers and the ministers of finance and the queens, if they're not the rulers, then who the hell runs the world from behind the curtain? And that's basically how I got into this build or something or that other society, which over time I obviously understood meant build a group.
Well, you know, the one thing that I do remember about Quebec wanted to secede and going through. I think it did come to a vote, didn't it?
Well, it did, and we won. And we won because in 1995, I seriously got into it. And it was so close. It's actually, the difference was that 38,000 Canadians out of the population base at the time of 32 million, that's 0.001%. got on buses from across the country, went to Quebec, that's the French-speaking part of Canada, and convinced the Quebecois, the French-speaking Canadians, you know, with letters from their countrymen that, you know, they're loved and please don't leave, because the mainstream media and the politicians from, you know, the left and the right and then the center and the nationalists and the local parties, you know, they were all, you know, trying to drive this wedge between the English and French-speaking Canadians. And a small group of very, very intense people convinced French Canadians, or enough of them, that they should stay. And this 0.5%, half a percentage point, made a difference. And Canada, to this day, is still a nation, which only goes to show you, when people work together, you know, what we can do, what miracles we can achieve. And this was actually a miracle, because as it took me three additional years to discover, the Conservative Party of Canada, which is like, would be like the Republicans of the United States, the Liberal Party of Canada, which would be like the Democrats, and the local and regional parties from the West Coast and the East Coast, and the Nationalists from Quebec, we figured out that all of these top party politicians in each one of these parties were one way or another linked to the Rockefeller Foundation.
This is, you know, interesting to me as we follow a lot of the films that are being done, the written material on it, and heck, kids with flip phones, iPhone, YouTubes. And we're finding out that I keep hearing about the Rockefeller connection. I know they're not the only one, but is this a new society that was created in the early 1900s, mid-1900s, or are they overlapping on something older?
Well, you know, Rockefellers, they're really nothing. They're dung, really, in the human history terms. And, you know, the fact that everybody in America, you know, everybody in the world knows the name David Rockefeller, you know, only goes to show you just how unimportant they are in terms of world history, politics. Because the really powerful people, the people who really move, you know, the strings from behind the curtain and actually control world events, 99.9999% of population don't even know they exist. Otherwise, they wouldn't be that powerful. And, you know, in money terms, the Rockefeller wealth is only 150 years old. The Rothschilds, who everyone seems to be the boogeyman of the world, you know, one world government, you know, their wealth is about 250 years old. Well, you know, I spent 2.5 years researching the roots of the Bilderberg Group, and I can tell you definitively, because I got physical proof, that the people who actually today call the Bilderbergers 800 years ago already existed, and they were called the Venetian Black Nobility. And from these old Venetian noble families, you know, sprung some of the most powerful families in the world, and the most powerful family in the world, as far as I have been able to ascertain over the past 1,000 years, are the Frescobaldis, and I know that no one has ever heard of them. And their wealth isn't measured in millions or billions or trillions, but rather quadrillions of dollars. And when I say quadrillions, I'm not just making up a large number with many zeros. I literally mean quadrillions, because I have documents, for example, from a, you know, mid-level powerful family, the German industrialists Krupp, K-R-U-P-P, who, you know, they were the original merchants of death in the 19th century, the arms suppliers, and of course they were one of the key financiers of Hitler. Well, I have one extract of Baron Krupp's one bank account, and in it, lo and behold, the man has 112 trillion, that's T, trillion dollars. So why do they keep telling us that Warren Buffett, you know, that geek by the name of Bill Gates, you know, with a paltry $50 billion, just happened to be the world's most powerful man, when in reality, they're not even good enough to serve coffee to the powerful men around the world.
Camouflage. You know, the one thing that I was thinking, that if you're going to be big, bad, uber top of the heap guy, do you want to be known? I mean, I would imagine you'd be pushing some other guys out in front of you, too, saying, oh, no, that guy's got it. You know, I may own ultimately all the media that says he's the richest guy. But and that's another thing. Do they we have a lot of this old money. Are they that concerned with the media, or is it at other levels that they're so worried about owning corporate media?
Well, I mean, if you control the media, the people who run the world from behind the curtain have been able to, you know, do so well over the past 50 years, is they've been able to convince people that what they see on television, what they read on the front page of the New York Times or the Washington Post or the Wall Street Journal is the truth. And, of course, these individuals, these people, you know, the great unwashed, as Rockefeller calls us, you know, most people just laugh in your face and in my face when we tell them, look, there's another reality to it, that Rockefellers, you know, they're not the good guys. The drug trade is actually what sustains the world economy. And they'll tell you, well, if that's the case, why is it on the cover of the New York Times?
That'll mean nothing. I don't need them to tell me what's what. I need Daniel Estulin. We're going to come back here on Declare Your Independence, and we'll answer that. What role does the media play? I mean, do they really need them? Or are they above that? Are they below it? Are they secret of it? I don't know. We'll find out when we come back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock, here in Liberty News Radio. Every afternoon, Monday through Friday, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEA beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. We have Daniel Estulin on. He has been the source of an enormous amount of information coming out from those that would rule us. You know, that's one thing, Daniel, I would be remiss if I did not at least ask you the question. You get a lot of inside information. I mean, you got a, you know, microchip, microphone, video camera on somebody's lapel or what?
In David Rockefeller's, you know, dentures.
What?
We have several people who are part of the, inner council who are, you know, our sources for years. People who understand that, you know, what Bilderbergers and their cohorts are planning is insane. And they certainly want to help, and they're doing a very, very, very good job doing it from the inside. And, you know, I just wish they could stay safe, and because if the Bilderbergers find out who they are, they'll certainly rub them out.
You really think so? I mean, you think it might not even be just kind of a little psyop, a deception, give you a little bit and hide certain things, keep you breadcrumbs in a certain other area? I mean, is it possible that they're using you?
Well, everything is possible, but in this particular case, the people who are actually passing me information, it's not one, it's several, they don't know they actually don't know that they're my sources. So I get the same information from several sources, and unless I can triple check it, you know, I don't publish it. And obviously they've tried to hook me over the years and discredit me, but unfortunately for them, unfortunately for the rest of us, they have never been successful. I got too good of a nose for these kinds of things. Just develop a kind of sensitivity for these kinds of rotten smells.
Well, this is one thing that I definitely, we just have you for the hour, so I wanted to get right to this one point. My thing is that these types of groups, societies, businesses, corporations, governments, I mean, you know, whatever, this collective fill in the blank, as a result of us allowing them to take over certain aspects of our lives. If we weren't willing participants in so much of this stuff, it wouldn't happen. And I'm wondering if we were able to get everybody on your list and all the corporations and they were just evaporated off the face of the planet, would within a decade or two, would we be facing the exact same thing?
Well, I think that's the answer to that question is obviously a yes. You know, it's because, it comes down to the basics, and the basics are the reason people don't believe in secret societies controlling the world is that theirs is a Cartesian fantasy world in which the isolated intentions of a very small group of individuals instead of the dynamics of social processes shape the course of history as the movement of evolving ideas and themes over successive generations. So if you don't have one group of people, well, somebody else will come in and, you know, they form another secret society. But, you know, Bilderberg actually isn't a society. There's no conspiracy, even though a lot of crazy people out there, you know, with their infantile fantasies see it such. Bilderberg is not a monolith, meaning that no group of people, I don't care how powerful they are, sitting around a table in a dark room holding hands, staring at a crystal ball, planning the world's domination. It's a meeting of people who represent a certain ideology. Now, that ideology isn't a one-world government, a new world order, as, again, a lot of people with infantile, you know, fantasies seem to believe, and they point out the George H.W. Bush speech as, you know, the clue that apparently holds the entire Bilderberg conspiracy together. That ideology that Bilderberg represents is of money. It's not about one-world government. It's about One World Company Limited. Okay, that's what it's about. It is a medium of bringing together financial institutions, which are the world's most powerful and most predatory financial interests. And, you know, at this time, it is that combination which is the worst enemy of humanity. And just look at it as, you know, as a financial conspiracy. The idea is create corporations that are more powerful than any government on earth. The Bilderbergs, they call it the aristocracy of purpose between European and North American elites on the best ways to rule the planet, obviously, on our behalf.
Well, I have to ask, you know, I mean, as a libertarian, I'm looking at this collective mentality of bringing everything together under one yoke, you know, and, you know, whipping the ox and, you know, get a move on little doggy. And I'm just wondering, isn't that inherently unstable? I mean, we're starting to see it now. Are they going to benefit from the financial turmoil that's taken over the planet now, or are they going to be victims of it?
Well, it's a very, very good question and a very complex question to answer. The world financial system is in ruins and it has been wiped out and destroyed. And what we're seeing right now are just the after effects of that, you know, destruction. You know, about 10 or 12 years ago, in one of the Bilderberg reports, and I, of course, I have all of the Bilderberg reports that have been given to me by my sources inside, I saw a phrase which, unfortunately, at the time I didn't understand because I was just, you know, that was new to it. I was learning and it was just so much to understand about how these people work. And the phrase was demand destruction. You know, and then about 2002, early 2002, a friend of mine who at the time was a very important member of the World Bank and also attended Bilderberger meeting several times, I asked him, I said, well, you know, what does it mean, demand destruction? And he said, well, how
I'm sorry, I didn't understand what you, I didn't understand what you said. What destruction?
Demand destruction.
Demand
phrase,
destruction.
Demand destruction. The phrase in the Bilderberg report literally was demand destruction. So I said to him, how do you destroy demand? And he said, well, how do you destroy it? I said, well, wars would be a great thing. He said, no, wars are very expensive. And so I said to him, well, how do you destroy demand? He said, you destroy the demand by destroying the world economy on purpose. You know, I kind of opened my mouth. He raised his hand, you know, to preempt my question. He said, if you're worried about David Rockefeller going hungry and living under a bridge, don't. He said, it's the same as what happened back in 1929. You know, the Great Depression wasn't really a great or a depression. It was simply a transfer of wealth. We, the people, lost our wealth, our monies, our equities, our homes, our savings. And then somebody else came along and bought all that stuff up for pennies on the dollar. And, you know, we know who this someone was by now. And this is exactly what they're doing now. You destroy the demand because the idea is you have zero growth. And if you don't have growth, you obviously lose population density. And that's what the circles around the Bilderberger, you know, forefathers, the, you know, the Venetian nobles and the Synarchy movement of empires and the different secret societies such as the Martinists, they realized that progress and development is directly proportional to population density. So we the people, if we're to grow from 6.7 billion people to the next plateau up, which is 10 billion people, we need to grow as nation states, as people. We need to progress scientifically. That's what separates us from monkeys, the idea and the ability of people to discover universal principles of nature, you know, such as gravitation, such as calculus, which obviously improves the lives of people on the planet and adds to the population density. And that's what Rockefeller and company, they don't obviously want, because they want to drag us back to the pre-industrial age, to the pre-nation state age of feudal lords, them 1% and the rest of us. Work the fields, our children and our children's children work the fields. And for that, they don't need 7 billion people. They just need enough, you know, people to work the fields, slave labor.
Okay, so what is their fear of a lot of people? I mean, that's not more livestock, or are they a threat to them? Do they see them rising up against a man? Is it a numbers thing that they feel physically threatened, or is it they got in their heads an optimal population to supply what they need? I mean, what is their reasoning behind it?
Well, the reason is that, you know, there's just simply not enough natural resource on the planet for 7 billion people, or for 10 or for 20. So you just need enough people on the planet to do the menial work for them. And if you have 6.7 billion, somebody needs to feed them. So when you have all these crazies, you know, in the alternative movement talking about, you know, the FEMA concentration camps and the idea that, you know, people are going to be, you know, put in the, well, it's not actually like that, because if you're going to put people in a concentration camp, somebody's going to have to feed them, which is just, you know, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. So it's the idea that natural resources are limited. You don't need that many people. You just need enough, you know, to do whatever it is that, you know, the Rockefellers and company want us to do.
Well, what do they want us to do? They want us to toil for them. Well, we'll talk about it more and what they have planned for us, according to Daniel Eschelin, author of Shadow Masters. We'll get to that when we get back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
God knows I just want to break free. Well, you know, you can't break free unless you know what you're breaking free from. Well, Daniel Eschelin started off with the book, The True Story of the Bilderberger Group, that's being made into a motion picture. $100 million budget. Woohoo! Tell me about that, Daniel.
Well, it's, it's an independent production by a Hollywood company, and It is being made into a Hollywood film, and a lot of people are accusing me of being a sellout and working for Bilderberg interests. But in the end, the money I'm going to make from the film is going to go a long way to help actually offset some of the costs of research. Because when you go on these trips and you research the things that I research, you know, the powerful people, the men who run the world, have a lot of this information hidden under 1,000 kryptonite locks, and to actually get at it takes a long time and also a lot of money. So, whatever money I'm going to make from this film is certainly going to be welcome towards my research.
Hey, man, you're talking to a libertarian.
Or a pink jacuzzi.
You're talking to a libertarian, man. You make as much money as you want. I don't care. You know, one thing that is interesting, though, is that the company that's taking this on, Halcyon, how do you say it? Halcyon?
Halcyon, yeah.
Halcyon, they're the ones that did the Terminator franchise, so the boys got some money.
Well, that's right, exactly. So they do have the money to make the film. And as I said, you know, God bless them, and I hope they do a good job. And needless to say, I hope I make lots of money, because it certainly, you know, it gives you the financial independence to do.
Well, tell me
what
they're
going
to do. Are they just going to follow your book verbatim, or are they going to Hollywood it a little bit, a little stylized?
They're going to Hollywood it 100%. They said, we're not taking positions. We're not taking sides. But, you know, it's a film. If people want to understand what, you know, how things are done, you read books, you know. So when somebody tells me, you know, when you ask somebody, have you read a book, they say, no, I've seen a movie. Why don't you read the book, you know, the original one?
Are they going to be using the name of the characters, or are they going to give them fictitious names?
I think it's going to be a love story, you know, something like The Constant Gardener, John le Carré's book or film. You know, there's going to be a hero, there's going to be a girl, somebody gets killed, hopefully not me, at the end of the film. you know, but, again, I don't really care. As long as I get paid and as long as I can take that money and use it towards good, I think I'm doing fine.
Yeah, it's all good. You know, it's a movie. Read the book. The let's go ahead and go into Shadow Masters. What are we learning in Shadow Masters that, you know, Bilderberger movie part two, Terminator 14? I mean, you know, whatever. What are we learning there?
Well, actually, what I do is I go down the rabbit hole even further, whether it's in the Bilderberger book, The True Story of the Bilderberg Group. I explain, you know, who these powerful organizations are, the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Venetian Black Nobility, the Bilderbergers, and how they kind of interlock amongst themselves. In The Shadow Masters, I go one level down and I explain who the actual doers of some of their actions are. So I explain, for example, how governments work with intelligence agencies, terrorists, drug traffickers, you know, basically doing the same thing they've been doing for years, killing people, selling drugs, laundering money. And I explain how this all, you know, for example, the drug money is from Afghanistan, launders its way through Wall Street, which is one of the things most people don't understand, that actually if you legalize the drug trade, entire world financial system would be immediately wiped out, because drugs annually bring in about $700 billion. That's in free cash. And if you multiply it by the fractional reserve, that's $4.2 trillion of actual funds that these things move annually. So you could never eradicate drugs. As an example of that, you know, the Taliban, when they came into Afghanistan back in 1996, the very first thing they did, they eliminated the drug crop, and immediately, you know, a few months later, we had in Asia the Asian tigers collapsed, and Wall Street suddenly was left dry. They had no cash. You know, today the NATO alliance controls about 97% of the country, and we have the biggest crop ever this year. There's a correlation between these two things.
No, say it ain't so. Of course there is. I mean, you know, this has been going on for, I mean, this came out, obviously, in Iran-Contra. I mean, this was neon flashing obvious, and they reported it, and the media went, yeah, we reported it, and then, you know, how's the weather today? So this is, there's nobody that follows up on this stuff and makes the connections in the media, and they give themselves cover by saying, hey, we reported it for, you know, the, 15 hours that we covered it in that one time as we exposed the evil empire of, and then we went on the, you know, Britney Spears had a new, you know, navel piercing or something. So, I just want to understand what role you see the media playing in this, because I publish Freedom's Phoenix, it's a news website, and we can find just about anything on anybody published by Associated Press. It was on PBS. It's in C-SPAN. It's on the news. You can, you know, Jason Burmes we had on earlier in the week or something. He did his Invisible Empire, and he's pulling all this footage from newsreels. So I'm going, this stuff is out there. It's just the way it's not packaged. You know, we're not talking about certain things. We're not talking about, you know, the important stuff of the birth of this country, which is all based on the sovereignty of the individual. No, we get trillions of dollars spent on a mandatory youth indoctrination camps, otherwise known as the public school system, to convince us that we need to buy more stuff and pledge allegiance to whatever shiny badge shows up with a gun. And I'm going, there is something more fundamental wrong than bad guys. There are always bad guys. But for them to flourish, they have to spend an enormous amount of time, effort, and money to change us to allow them to exist. What is the mechanism by which they do that? Are they that involved in the media, the movies, the our education system? They have to change us.
They permeate all of these levels, obviously. You know, the people in power, they go out of their way to make sure that we are perpetually misled and manipulated. And, of course, the majority's perception of reality, especially in political arena, is not their own. It is truly manipulated and imposed upon us, both them, by the men behind the curtain. And, of course, you know, you mentioned public education system or education system itself. It's education system in America, in Canada, in Europe. It's called outcome-based education, which is vicious suppression of creative powers of reason. Now, if people are to participate in self-government, they must participate in the ideas by which society is self-governed. And this would mean, of course, the end of oligarchies, nations which foster the creative mental development of their population, producing people who will not tolerate oligarchic forms of rule indefinitely. So what you need to do is you need to make people stupid, which is basically what they've done through, you know, the boob tube, the television. And how do you make people stupid? Well, you don't give them intelligent jobs. You don't give them intelligent lessons. You don't teach them things that they need to understand. You eliminate classical culture, you know, from the curriculum. Of course, classical culture breeds higher quality of intellect. And instead of classical music, you give them rap, you give them ska, you give them heavy metal. And this is how you create, you know, globalization, which is just another word for empire, which is just another word for tyranny. And, of course, no nation is allowed to grow its own food or exert sovereignty over its technologies and obviously natural resources. Nobody pays any attention. Nobody says anything at all, because the entire population has been dumbed down to the point of no return.
Well, you started this investigation in the early 90s, or at least in the 90s, and I advocate to maintain my sex, drugs, and rock and roll, but you know, I want to have the freedom to do so instead of having it programmed for me. So I'm just asking, from the time that you started doing this to the decentralization and democratization, or whatever you want to call it, of information and the ability to communicate immediately with any other mind on the planet, has the internet or the information age and the peer-to-peer communication of all things, you know, that makes where the marketplace or just where I click my mouse, that has determined what is or is not of importance. And I've been encouraged by the last few years of how much the young have embraced just information, truth. You know, they've abandoned traditional media and traditional news and traditional education. And I mean, they're changing. Is that having an impact? Are the big bad guys afraid of this change?
Well, I don't think they're afraid. I mean, they still control it. But, you know, again, on the one hand, it's obviously the positive effect is that, you know, our interview tonight is going to be downloaded in Argentina in 5 minutes. And then it's going to be passed on to somebody in South America, you know, or South Africa, and then from there to New Zealand, and, you know, a guy in Japan will be listening to me, you know, to our interview tomorrow morning. And so that, you know, that's the great aspect of the internet and the information age. On the other hand, there's just so much disinformation out there. Also, you know, most of the research I do, I actually get on the plane, get on the bus, get on the train, and go places, you know, like the Shadow Masters. I spent the last 6 months working with Shadow Masters from Bangkok in Thailand, because half of the book deals with Victor Booth, the alleged merchant of death that the American government is trying to extradite.
Oh, that's a good thing for us to get to when we come back. Remember where you were. We'll pick it right up when we come back with Daniel Eschelin on the Bilderberger Group here and Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, in just a little bit.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Hancock and Daniel Eschelin, we need to find some truth, justice, and what used to be the American way, wherever the heck that was. And I don't know what it is now, but I tell you, it's taking my money and giving it to somebody. It's giving it to somebody else. Now, you were going, you're starting to make the Thailand connection. Go ahead and finish your thought, Daniel.
Well, you know, I spent the last 6 months living in Thailand researching an amazing story of Victor Booth, an alleged merchant of death. This is a guy that the United States government has spent about $80 million over the past 15 years trying to frame and claim to be the greatest arms merchant and weapons dealer on the planet, on the history of the planet. And in the 6 months I spent in Thailand and previously in Africa, I basically demonstrated in my book that the entire thing is smoke and mirrors, that this Victor Booth character is not guilty at all. And what is an amazing story that, you know, in this case, of this alleged gun runner, American government lost the first court case. Then I have documented information that Derek Audney, the DEA agent in charge in Bangkok, offered $20 million of United States taxpayers' money to former Russian military nuclear intelligence officer who was working at the time at Victor Booth's defense in Thailand to help him sabotage the case. Now, why would you do that if you actually have irrefutable proof that this guy is guilty? Then I also prove in my book that one of America's most famous journalists, Douglas Fair, has written a book called The Merchant of Death, has perjured himself twice in front of the United States Congress by lying outright about the what he actually saw in the Victor Booth case. Then we have the DEA itself using one of the Victor Booth co-conspirators, kidnapping him right out of Thailand and bringing him to the United States. You know, I'm not a lawyer, but I think that's illegal, the last time I checked.
Okay, so this case also, is doing what? I mean, the shadow government, they're going after this guy because why? He's a threat to them in what way?
Well, you see, the story of Booth begins back in the 1990s when the Soviet Union fell apart. He was working as a translator in Mozambique. And then, because his hobby has always been planes, he bought a couple of used up Antonov 24s, which is like the old jalopos. And he started using them for fly cargo from one part of Africa to the other. And, you know, at the time, especially in the early 1990s, the entire continent was ablaze in regional local conflicts. In fact, 32 countries out of 53 were at war. And so all the Western cargo airliners basically pulled out because they didn't want to be shot out of the sky. And so this Victor Booth character, who was not a KGB agent, but just a guy who loved airplanes, and his kamikaze, you know, the Ruski-Russian pickle-eating pilots, basically by 1995 came to control about 90% of African continent, you know, all the cargo trade. You know, that's a mega monopoly. Not even Microsoft could actually brag of having this kind of a monopoly. And then when the war started to subside, all these Western companies, corporations, and governments wanted to come back, but there was just no way to come back because this one guy controlled the entire continent. And, of course, as I show in my book, if you want to start wars, if you want to control natural resources, and if you want to do what Americans and the British have been doing in Africa for a very, very long time, basically controlling the entire continent, it won't do if you have this one Ruski controlling the entire African cargo trade. So they came up with this amazingly diabolical plan to get rid of him, and at the same time actually hurt Russia's prestige internationally, because buried very, very deeply inside the court proceedings against Booth are very clear indications that if Booth is extradited to the United States, he'll be charged with nuclear terrorism, with providing nuclear components to terrorist groups from around the world. And, of course, the implications of that is no one could actually get their hands on this stuff unless a government was behind it. And, obviously, Booth would only get this material from the Soviet Union or from Russia, which means that Russia will be put in the same, you know, pariah state status as North Korea and Iran, which, needless to say, will destroy their credibility internationally.
We have individuals in the United States government, groups in the United States government, at the behest of someone using the United States government to go after this guy because they wanted to have the air traffic or the ability to transport cargo in Africa. Africa is going to start opening up. Here comes China. Asia's going in. There's enormous amounts of natural resources there, and we don't have a big enough. I mean, just in the last couple of years did we even create this Africa thing, you know, for our military, you know, this Africa Com or whatever the heck it is, and command. And I'm going, all right, so we're going to Africa. Is this something about a sphere of influence and eliminating competition to their interest? Is that what's going on?
Well, Africa is the final frontier. You have, in Sudan and Darfur, you have more oil than in Saudi Arabia. You have coltan, you have natural gas, you have all the minerals and that you need on Earth, and of course China controls now 6% of that market, and the Americans, needless to say, are there as well. The Russians are there, the Israelis are there, the British are there, the French are there. There are no longer these, you know, old style friendships and partnerships. It's just, you know, the very, very short-term relationships between these nations. They're all fighting each other. They're all trying to sabotage each other's operations. And, again, it won't do if you have one guy controlling the entire market. So they have to get rid of him because, again, if you control Africa, if you control the situation on the ground, you can sell guns and butter to both sides in the conflict. You can feed, needless to say, also one of the key elements is the blood diamonds, which the CIA has a very big part in, because the African smugglers use the Hezbollah, which is Lebanese terrorists, and needless to say, the American government knows very, very well and participating in the operations as well, getting the blood diamonds to both sides in the equation, and that's how conflicts are fed, nurtured into the infinity. And that's
okay. Well, let's bring this back to the United
States. My book.
Okay, well, let's bring this back to the United States, because I'm very interested in what your take is on how it's affecting life here. How do we or anyone else on the planet extradite ourselves from this type of bloodletting in the term of tax money? I mean, you know, this cannot happen unless it's done in our name, behind the shield of some U.S. military or covert op or foreign policy, foreign aid to different countries, help from intelligence, satellites, military drones, attack, you know, blah, 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 blah. How do we extradite ourselves as a people from this? I mean, what do we do? I mean, you're telling us all this information. Now what?
For starters, you get rid of this idiot you have for a president. You know, you had an idiot for a president before. You have a bigger idiot right now.
There's a big, long list. It's like looking down a train track, man. They're just, you know, one right after the other.
Well, that's absolutely true. But, you know, for example, in Afghanistan, America is sending its, you know, its sons to die, basically protecting the drug trade.
Because, okay, let's not. How do we not?
If the government was serious about the drug trade, they don't need to send troops into Afghanistan. All they need to do is circle the country and make sure the drugs don't get out. But that's obviously not the idea, because if you did that, the entire world economy would collapse onto itself. They need it because the drugs feed Wall Street, and Wall Street feeds itself.
So where's this going? I mean, you know, it's just they're going to keep getting richer. They're going to keep having more power. They're going to have more and more influence. They're going to blame, you know, use the power of law enforcement to put this guy in jail, take over his stuff, get this guy's goodies, confiscate RICO, whatever. I mean, you know, I can't see a solution that doesn't primarily focus on the individual, us here, you know, junior high kids growing up just knowing the truth. I mean, at the very beginning of all of this is understanding what's happening and understand the difference between right and wrong. If you don't even know.
Well, the most important thing you do is you go back to the idea of nation-state republics. You get rid of this of these idiotic unions that we have in Europe and South America, in Africa, you know, in Asia, Asian Union being created right now as we speak, and also the North American Union. You know, you also get rid of the monetary systems, because the world today is run by monetary systems instead of the national credit systems. You go back to the national credit system. You go back to the Hamiltonian Bank. Now, if you're smart, you don't want a monetary system to run the world. You want a sovereign nation states to have their own credit system, which is the system of their currency. Now, of course, in Europe, you can't have that, because in Europe, the governments are subjects to control by private banking interests called independent banking systems. Of course, you know, they're part of the Lombard League, which went down in the Dark Ages in the 13th century. You know, these are the roots of the Bilderbergers. And so, again, you go back to the, instead of having the monetary system, you go national credit systems, banks that lend money to industries to actually make the country grow, not speculative sharks, but the same way they had it a long time ago, the Hamiltonian banks. That's what you want in the United States. Of course, they won't allow you to have that, because that would actually go against all the interests of the shadow masters. And we see actually in Greece right now, the country is at war with itself. And the best thing that Greece can do is actually walk away from the European Union, and that will probably destroy the Union itself and set the shadow masters and the Bilderbergers back several decades. Unfortunately, they won't do that.
Well, what will they do?
Well, they're just going to – well, they've capitulated, which is what the government has done. Unfortunately, the people
– Well, you got Spain right behind them. You got Portugal. You got Iceland. You got Spain. I mean,
yeah,
I mean,
Portugal,
they're ready to fall,
Spain,
man.
You have Italy, you have Iceland. All these nations are going to fall. You know, the entire European Union is bursting at its seams. And, again, the financial system has been wiped out. And what we're seeing, again, are the after effects of that destruction.
There's so much more to talk about, but you gotta go. This is as much time as you got for us.
It's midnight in Spain, but you know, I'd love to be back on your show, because this was fun. So why don't we do this again in a couple of weeks?
You know, I think we will, and we'll have Daniel Eschelin back. I got, you know, like, all we did was create about, I don't know, several hundred more questions. Well, congratulations.
When I'm back, I promise to tell you how the Oklahoma City was actually a mini nuclear explosion, and that Timothy McVeigh had as much to do with it as Winnie the Pooh, Peter Pan,
Eyes. More goodies to look forward to. Thank you. And we'll get back to that. And I appreciate Shadow Master. We'll have it, all the information, up on Freedom's Phoenix right now as archived to the show. We'll be right back.